fans in a lot of ways. I know how they feel. They're great. They're loyal. They want a bang for their buck.
Patrick Alvin is the new general manager of your Vancouver Canucks. The boys are back for a special episode to discuss all the changes that have been made in Canucks Nation and what is in store for the club going forward. This is the Larsh Cast. Let's go.
Hold up.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Larsh Cast.
We're still around?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think, I don't know, what are we? It's been a while, so this must be season four now at this point, I'm pretty sure. Hey, I don't even
know. Ryan, I don't know what you were told, but TJ told me after Jim Benning was fired that he was never gonna do this again, but I guess he's out of his mourning now.
Changed his mind, hey? Yeah, you know what? It's we're back, and we've got a fiery energy today. I like it, you know.
In the wise words of Bindi Johal, I'm still around.
All right, here we go.
Jim Benning isn't.
Right. So you know what, guys? Let's get right into it here. I mean, we're going to do a little short hitter tonight, and hopefully we could do this a bit more regularly now. But we got a lot of big news in Canucks land, obviously. But before we go into that, I want to just ask, I wasn't able to watch the game last night. So what was your impression of a couple things? One, what I would consider, in just looking at the 15-minute game review, some brutal officiating. And then an unbelievable performance from Spencer Martin, spoiled by one rough goal, but that kid's been unreal. What was your sense of watching the team? Because I think they've turned a corner, but not seeing the game last night, I'm concerned.
You want me to start first here? I mean, you know, it was a frustrating game, you know, starting off with the power plays, the penalties there. I feel like Connor McDavid has become like the LeBron James of hockey. You can't touch him. I mean, you know, most of the time when you hit something from behind, it's a penalty. But you watch that play, he barely touched him.
The cross check?
David jumped into the board. Like, come on. And then he's bitching like usually, you know, LeBron usually does, right? Or Crosby used to do back in the day before he was told to shut his fucking mouth and play hockey. I think Connor McDavid has a lot of growing up. He's a great player. He's probably the best player in the NHL. But you know what? The officiating was pretty poor. But I will say the Canuck play in overtime was dreadful. Like, I'm not sure what they were trying to do or they're trying to get to a show. I felt bad for the Spencer Martin kid. I mean, he's never won an NHL game, but he's made, what, 47 saves over two games.
Unreal.
It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like that before from a guy who's basically a fifth-string goalie starting the season. I mean, to me, he's done everything they could have asked for. Yeah, he let in a bad goal there, but come on. He's let in one bad goal in two games. Only reason they got a point. I think the only reason they got a point in both games, really, even the Florida game, yeah, they were better defensively, and their structure was good. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think the Canucks played a good two periods last night, and then they were just in a defensive mode that they used to do with Travis Green.
Yeah.
Who have always noticed go, play offensive. That's the best defense. So they kind of just turtled to me last night. So I wasn't really impressed.
I mean, I didn't actually watch the game. I had my own hockey game to play. So I mean, I appreciate Nav's analysis there. But I mean, we didn't score. I didn't score. I wasn't out there for the gaffe in OT where we also lost, right? So our buddy turned it over at our own blue line, which you never do that in overtime when you're the last man. But anyways, I'm not going to call anybody out. He's a good guy. Just a frustrating loss in overtime, boys. Just what are we talking about? My game or the Canucks? No, buddy.
Yeah. Let's move on here. How blue is the sky?
When it comes to Spencer Martin, I think the Canucks have an out here with the Yaro Halak situation.
Right.
Because if this is like – legitimately, you know, the kind of goaltending that you're going to get with Spencer Martin, obviously not this heroic every game, but if you can get goaltending to this caliber of play, you know, just the ability to trust your goaltender is huge. And if the Canucks can actually trust Spencer Martin now, you know, then that makes Jaroslav Halak expendable. And I think that's great, great news, because that $1.5 million that kicks in after the 10th game, That's a big, you know, hit on the cap. And Jim Rutherford today and Patrick Alvin, the new GM, which we're going to talk about in here in a second. But they both hinted at the fact that it's not a good situation to be a playoff team or a non-playoff team up against the cap. So you don't want to deal with that extra 1.5. And I think if Spencer Martin is legit, which, it, you know, all signs point to it at this point, he has a cup ring. But if he's legit, then I think you have to move Halak out of here.
But the thing going from that is, even if he's not, as you said, if he's not as good as he's shown in the last two games, but even if he's decent enough to be a backup goalie, how many games are you going to need him to play? let's be straight up honest. Demko is going to play like down the stretch. If they're going for a playoff spot, if they're not going for a playoff spot, he's probably going to play about 80% of the games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you really need Halak? Because the biggest problem is Halak going to wave to go to certain places like Edmonton or, you know, wherever else, right? He's going to choose where he wants to go, right? Because Jim Benning gave him a great contract. But,
well, also the team, the team that, that takes him on too has to accept that $1.5 million bonus.
What kind of fucking contract offer was that? Like, you give him 10 games and he's going to make $1.5 million bonus? I'm like, come on. Like, did you really expect Demko to play 73 games so he doesn't make that 1.5?
We can trash the contract all we want, but the fact of the matter is it's here. That's the deal. That's the contract that we're dealing with. You have to deal with it. And the other thing I want to mention is that you can kind of force Halak's hand by just saying that we're not going to play you any more games this year. So what is Halak going to do? Like, refuse to get traded? Or you know, and sit on the bench all year long just so the Canucks can avoid that 1.5. No, he's not going to want that. He's getting up there in the age. You know, he's going to want to play as many games as possible so he can sign another contract next year. So I think you could force his hand. I think Spencer Martin is forcing the Canucks' hand in a good direction here. And okay. I think that's...
Hang on. Before we anoint this guy as the goalie 1B over here for the Vancouver Canucks, what are you guys making, TJ? I'll go to you first on this here. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Spencer Martin has had two starts in the last 5 days. His previous NHL start was 5 years ago. So my concern is that you ramp this kid up after two good games, shove Halak out the door, and have an absolutely troublesome situation where if this guy falls off, you have no idea what to do at that point. DiPietro hasn't shown himself as a credible option. So what do you make of that? What about this do you think makes Halak a must trade?
I think you just have to look at the situation by zooming out. And like Nav said, how many more games is Halak or the backup goaltender going to play the rest of the season? Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot, maybe five, let's say.
Yep.
So if that's your concern and you don't think Spencer Martin can play those five games, well, you're going to keep Halak and you're going to get that ding, you know, that 1.5. But at this point, I mean, look at what we've seen. Spencer Martin doesn't give you the impression that he's going to falter anytime soon. You know, he looks like he can play in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Tampa Bay thought highly enough of him to make him their third string goaltender for their cup run last year. You don't do that as the best team in the league unless you believe in your goaltender. You see him in practice. You see how he's responding to these world-caliber, world-class players. So that's the reason I would say you can kind of bet that he's going to be able to sustain himself enough for at least five games the rest of the season.
Yeah, fair enough. But to be devil's advocate there is, how many teams actually have a legit third-string goalie? I don't care what team you are.
Well, all the playoff contenders probably have third stringer that can play, but a legit third stringer? I mean, not a whole lot.
I agree.
It's a good devil's advocate point there. But
so what we got? Like, how many games are left in the season? I mean, I probably should know this, but like, we're in the 40 mark. I mean, 40 something.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't even know.
It's just like, you know what I liked today about the press conference with, you know, Jim and Alvin is.
Yeah, let's talk about the new GM first.
They sounded realistic to me.
Yeah.
They're not selling. Like, they realize.
No false promises. Let's be honest, guys.
Even Bruce Boudreau, over the last few games, I know obviously we've had some COVID issues, but he hasn't been playing Podkozin. He hasn't been playing Hoglander that much. He's even in some of his press conferences, Boudreau's kind of coming out and calling out some of the players that they need to be better, that these guys need to give you more. The reality is kind of probably setting in for Bruce, too. I mean, Bruce has been fantastic for this team, but you know what? I think the effect of Bruce has kind of worn off to a slight degree. And this is more likely the team the Canucks are. Very inconsistent. You know, the defensively extremely poor.
How can you say that with so many guys out right now?
If you would have listened to what
But Nav's right. Boudreau can assess talent. Like, he knows what
he can tell. He's not playing certain guys.
Yeah, I mean, granted, this team is in shambles just because.
But Nav, if you're saying that certain guys like Podkozin and Hoglander can't play consistently well up the lineup, well, that's because they aren't at that point in their development.
I'm not even going to bitch about their forwards. I'm just trying to straight up. These guys are hockey guys whole life. He just coached his 1,000th game in the NHL the other. Jim Rutherford's like in his 70s. He's been in sports in the NHL probably for over 40, 50 years, realistically. These guys know, like, if you ask me right now, is this team good enough to make the playoffs? They might sneak in. But man, come on, look what they'd happen when.
Well, let's ask you straight up. Are you saying the Canucks are not going to make the playoffs? Yes or no?
Are the Canucks not going to be? You know what? If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago when I was on.
No, right now. Enough beating around the bush now.
They're not going to look. You know why they're not going to play make the playoffs? Because look how well they've played. Look how many points they've picked up in the last 15 games. You know where they were when this. This started. They were seventh in the Pacific Division. They're still seventh in the Pacific Division.
Okay, and Ryan, how about you? Are the Canucks going to make the playoffs?
No, no, there's no way. And I'll tell you what, and I hate to be one of those guys. You can tell we're becoming true media guys because my answer is going to be a very, very media answer.
Fuck that.
I'm using it. That was a must win last night. Not only was it a must win, it was a must win where you were up in the game. You know what I mean? And I get like, this is the epitome of you're up against it.
I'm very curious to see what JR is going to do and Alvin here and on the rest of the
they're trading somebody big. I'm calling
Here's the thing though.
Let's table the trade talk for now because I do want to get to that, but let's just talk about this new hire in Patrick Alvin because three Stanley Cups. He spent a ton of time with Rutherford. He's played with some of the biggest superstars, you know, the likes of Sidney Crosby. This is a massive hire, but I know there's been a lot of talk. Is it one, and I'll go to Nav first, is this enough, or do we need one other person in the front office? And two, what do the Sedins do now?
You know what? They learn. let's be realistic.
Yeah.
The Sedins were brought in here as almost to calm the fan base down, just like Trevor Linden was brought in here many years ago prior to that. Like just calm the fan base
down. There's more to the story with
them. No, but they've
it is a bit of a hey, we're still here, we're not playing, but we're still your Sedin. I agree to a sense.
And if the Sedins are who we know they are, they did not want to have a major role right away. They're going to learn just like they've done their entire career. They want to learn. They're not even really working much in Vancouver. They're working more in Abbotsford from what I hear on Twitter and stuff. You know, all the pictures you see, they're on the ice with the Abbotsford team. Let them build up, right? Let's be honest. Like by the time maybe, I think TJ, you tweeted it earlier.
Yeah.
How much time does Jim Rutherford have here? He's 72 years old.
I think he signed a 3-year deal.
Maybe two.
Yeah. So maybe the goal here is let's see in the 3 years where he is. Let's see where the Canucks are. Maybe
if
Elvin's done a good job, maybe he moves up in a different role.
Yeah. Let me piggyback off of that because you're referencing the tweet that I made, which basically is saying that because JR hired a familiar, you know, his former understudy in Pittsburgh. Patrick Alvin has worked with JR for many years. So they have a great relationship, a great rapport. I really believe that what JR is trying to do here is to groom the next president of hockey operations for when he does eventually leave. And he has full confidence, in my opinion, that Patrick Alvin can step into that role and be that guy. By all accounts, you know, he won this GM candidacy fair and square. Obviously, it came down to the wire. It wasn't a rushed decision, which I appreciate as a Canucks fan. I really appreciate the due diligence and the deliberations that took place here to build this front office. And they're not done. I believe there's another candidate that's going to come in and fill another AGM role here. And I think Darren Dreger just rumored that it could be another female as well, which would be great for the diversity, improved diversity that Vancouver is now representing. But when it comes to Alvin, if that's the case and he does groom Alvin to become the next president of hockey operations, well, then it opens the door for a whole array of scenarios, which, you know, one of which includes Émilie Castonguay becoming a GM for the first time in the National Hockey League as a woman, or that Sedins could at that point feel comfortable enough to step into that GM role, which I think in 3 years' time is still not enough time. If you look at the Sedins' development, a lot slower than that over the course of the year.
Well,
the course
of their year. For Emily, though, I think that's a bit of a better option.
It could be. It could be that situation where she steps into the GM role, and obviously, her previous mentor in Montreal, I forgot his name, Gauthier, I think it was, or something like that. He was mentoring her for that type of role to eventually become general manager of an NHL team one day. And her sister, her dearly departed sister, I think 10 years ago, tragically passed, said to Emily on the last day that she talked to her that you're going to be the GM of the Vancouver Canucks one day. So that's very like,
that just kind of
blows my mind. I don't know if you guys believe in that kind of spirituality, that connection. I do, obviously.
And we'll get Nav's opinion here in a second, but let's talk about our qualifications because there's a couple things that I think makes her a really good fit. And I want to hear what your guys' thoughts are on this. She's incredibly qualified. And I think it's when you have a situation where you have somebody who's not a traditional hire doing a role like that for the first time, the Canucks are making damn sure she's the right fit. Like, this is not a hire that you can get wrong. They believe in her fully. And I mean, there's a couple things that I like. One, she's got experience as a player agent. She understands that conversation, which is something that we've had some issues with. Not only that, she's got a law and finance double degree. So we're talking capology here. Not only that, she's a bit more of a fresh hire, not a retread. I mean, Bruce Boudreau's a retread, beautiful retread for the Canucks. Yeah. But this is a position that I think a retread is not a suitable fit. So, Nav, what do you think about that?
You know what? I loved her press conference. I just love the confidence. I love when she came in. She's well-spoken. She's obviously very intelligent. And what was she saying? What's the goal? The goal here is to win a Stanley Cup. I'm glad she came out and said that. You know, that's what you need. She's got the confidence. That's what she's here for. She's a go-getter. But you know what? To me personally, I'm watching that. And I always have the same thing when I see like a minority get a job or now, you know, a female getting a job. I wish in the next 5 to 10 years that this isn't even a story anymore. Yeah. It's such a cool story now. There we go. She got an opportunity, you know, first chance here in Vancouver, maybe one of the first chances around the NHL to get a big job like that. But I hope this isn't a big deal. I hope she is the future general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. And I hope it isn't a big deal. They're like, oh, yeah, okay. Who cares?
To speak to it's that.
Like hiring, hire a brown guy, hire a black guy, hire an Asian guy, hire a woman.
The fifth candidate was Nav Desange.
Yeah, exactly. What's funny that you say that.
But he's friends with Tej from the Large Cast, so we had to say no.
Who isn't? But seriously, man, when I wrote down, TJ gave me a little script of some of the things we were going to talk about, and the way I framed
rip it up,
talking
rip
about
it up.
Her,
I created his own.
But when I put that question up, I'll text you a picture of it. Literally says under the category of about freaking time, Canucks have announced her hiring. Like it's time.
Good on them.
I want to continue. Well, Nav, go ahead. Finish your train of thought there.
You know, one thing I really like, and I'm reading from all over the NHL, from the media personalities, just around the NHL, is like, this is a very good front office. When was the last time you heard this about the Vancouver organization? How long has it been like, oh, it's just turmoil?
When Trevor Linden and Jim Benning were there. Listen,
this is a great front office.
I do want to
comment on that. We can talk about it a little bit more after you guys. All these guys on Twitter, oh, why didn't you hire this guy? Why didn't you hire that? Nobody knew. Like, who was a Tampa Bay? Darsh, was it? Like,
Matthew Darsh, the Darsh cast was going to be our new name.
So honestly, besides like maybe like 10%, the other 90% had no idea who this guy was until they're like, oh, Tampa Bay. Let me let you guys know and remind you guys, Jim Benning had won a Stanley Cup in Boston when he became the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. There was excitement. Oh, this guy, he knows what he's doing. Let's build a tough, strong team that can win a cup. It doesn't always work out. So let these guys do what they're going to do. You don't always know. Just because they're in a good organization doesn't mean they're going to make a great general manager or anybody in the management team. So let's calm down. Even McFarland, that was all I wanted. McFarland,
anybody can fall off McFarland? The next year. Louis Erickson.
McFarland works with Joe Sakic. It makes him great, though.
Exactly. Like,
no, it was because he handled the cap, I think, in Colorado, and a lot of people were excited. I mean, I was excited about McFarland too. I was saying it last season.
He's learning under Sakic. Hopefully, he learned to keep his fingers out of snow.
He was there before Sakic, if I remember correctly. But let's go back to Emily Costange.
I
liked what Nav said, because that's exactly what I felt and what I gathered from listening to her press conference. But also before that, I was reading some articles about her, and this article particularly one in November 2019 that came out after the Lafreniere draft. You know, she was, I think, at the time the only NHL player agent that was a female, and so she had a lot of clients at that point. She's built up her reputation, and you know, on that note, none of her clients, who she told a week prior to her hiring, spilled the beans about anything. Nobody leaked anything. That tells you how you know much that relationship meant to them, and how tight and like how much respect they had for her. So that was great. But anyways, that interview specifically mentioned, you know, they talked about how she's the only female in the room when it comes to this sports agent industry, which is a cutthroat industry. As we all know, sports agents, lawyers, you put a bunch of them in the room, hunting for clients. It's a dog eat dog world. For her to be able to survive that world because of her belief in her knowledge, as she said many times, knowledge is power. That's that confidence that is, it inspires you as a fan. It inspires you as somebody listening to her talk for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the type of feeling I get with her hire. It has nothing to do with her being a female, but at the same time, it does come from the fact that she was a female in a male dominated dog eat dog world. And she survived that world. And she wants,
you have to excel. You
and
don't
she,
just
and
survive,
she has like... a freaking vision board. She wants to, she's got ambition. Mm-hmm. And she speaks with such confidence that, and when it came to that emotional question that she was asked by Gemma Carson-Smith, great question about how hard it was to leave her clients. She showed a human compassionate side to her that you can't ignore as well as a human, because she focused on this one aspect of building a team by making sure the players on your team feel great about themselves. And that's such a key element to any type of team building in any sports world. Like how your team feels, how the chemistry with your line mates, with your coaches, with the organization, like the management, as we all know, after that situation where the flat cap hit and we lost to Foley, Markstrom, Stetcher, Tanev, people were legitimately pissed at the management. They were pissed thinking that this bubble team that was like brought together and came together and had so much success was like the heart and soul was ripped apart after that. And it really kind of left a stench. And so the things that Emily was talking about, I really appreciated hearing those.
I feel bad. I feel bad for her though, man. I feel bad
because she's because now she's going to have to deal with Canucks fucking idiots.
Well, no, because now that you've supported her and said, you know, you like her.
Twitter's gonna yeah, that's going to take, that's going to be a real knock to her credibility.
We apologize. It's just not going to end well.
Well, hold on. People still think I'm misogynistic, I think, because of the Rachel Dorey comments I made. And I wanted to clarify that.
Oh, God.
No, because I think hold on. Hear me out. Rachel Dorey was another hire in the analytics department. And you know, there was a little bit more of a mixed reaction with her hiring. I don't know if you guys saw that. I think it was pretty clear. I mean, even Don Taylor was talking about it on Donnie and Dolly the day after. But the thing is like she made some comments about the team. I'm not going to get too into it because it doesn't matter anymore. She's part of the team, but she made some comments like revealing things about players on the team and calling out players for being anti-maskers. And like I said, I'm not going to get too into it, but those are the reasons why I felt like, okay, I didn't like that aspect of her media game, like spreading gossip and revealing secrets about, or not secrets, but revealing things that you're not necessarily supposed to reveal behind the scenes. You know, I'm sure a lot of these guys in the room in the media circles, they see and hear a lot of things, but they keep it to themselves. Right. That's what I said. I said, I didn't appreciate those comments. And then all of a sudden I became this misogynistic person because she was a female hire, but I am happy for her as an analytics expert. She obviously has a great resume. Jim Rutherford is obviously doing his due diligence, and that's the end of it. And there's nothing more than that. And I maybe shouldn't have made those comments in hindsight because Twitter is
for the 975th
for the 999th time. I probably
nice to say.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said what I said so abrasively on Twitter. And for some reason, I keep forgetting how overactive it can get. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just numb. Maybe I'm just numb to it all because it's been relentless since day one.
Here's something to think about. If you think about how you would react to it.
I'm very fair and genuine. You guys should know I wouldn't have reacted this way. But like the thing is, I think I'm just numb to all this, like the overreaction of Twitter because it's happened so relentlessly since day one. But the last thing I'll say about Rachel Dorey, though, is that she's now an asset to this organization, and I wish her the best of luck going forward, and that's it. There's no hate. There's no animosity. That's it.
All right. Speaking of no hate,
you wanted to love her on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. This is a great segue because I know, TJ, you wanted to talk about it, and it is a topic of conversation and something that affects anybody who's a sports fan in this market is what's going on with the deals. I mean, you know, we've got the Turner Media deal in the U.S. that we're going to have a chance to see how that takes shape next year with some really, really exciting new talent coming on. But where are things at with 650, guys? Do you know? Because I know there's been a pretty decent amount of talk out there about the potential that maybe there's going to be a shift in where the Canucks broadcast rights are going. I mean, I love Sportsnet. I love 980. I mean, I'm a big radio guy in general here, so I don't think there's a bad choice. But, you know, there is the angle, and I know, TJ, I'll let you kind of go off on this a little bit, but the, you know, C-Mac, fan of the show and a big part of the reason that we have some of the success that we have.
He was the reason, let's be honest. He was the reason.
Definitely not talent.
Anybody who followed the Larchcast saw him when he was on the Larchcast and heard what he said.
Exactly, so, right? Yeah. So here's the question. One, do we think 650 re-upped at the deadline? It, for those that don't know, December 31st was the deadline for 650 to re-up for their contract. And two, what are our thoughts about this? Is this something where the Canucks are going to try and take this on internally? Or TJ, do you have any inside scoop? Or what's your opinion? And then we'll go to Nav and see what he thinks as well.
So, yeah, like, I'm glad you mentioned that there was a deadline where they had to re-up with 650, and that was December 31st, and we haven't heard anything about it. And, you know, I don't know whether you can read into that either way, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because at the end of the day, people are going to remain professional until their contract is up. But if they did re-up, there could still be a scenario where they only re-up with their radio rights.
Yep.
Because C-Mac was the one who ran the TV while he was at 650. He ran the Sportsnet broadcast while he was the program director at 650. And now he's the director of communications with the Canucks. So if the Canucks decide to go internally, in-house with their TV broadcast, you already have the man in place to lead you there and to make sure that runs smoothly. And that's mm-hmm. C-Mac. So there is a potential avenue here where the Canucks choose to go in-house with their TV broadcast, and that would be a significant change into the way Sportsnet 650 runs their station and the amount of personnel that they're able to hold on.
What do you mean by the in-house? Like, what do you mean? Like
the Canucks TV broadcast.
So it'd be like the LA Kings broadcast.
It would be like the paper.
Everybody that works on the broadcast is just the craziest.
So we'd have to pay for another channel?
No, it would be, I guess there would be a channel, maybe pay-per-view style. You know how they used to do Canucks TV pay-per-view? Yeah, I don't know.
Really good.
The bottom line is, though, it's a very difficult conversation. Maybe they can still negotiate a partnership where they sell their broadcast to Rogers so that Rogers can continue, you know, with this Canadian Sportsnet, Rogers, you know, Hockey Night in Canada, all that stuff, right? But there is an avenue for them to do that because C-Mac is there and he knows how to do it. I'm sure there's other people in the world that could do it, but he's that expert that you have in-house now.
Yeah, not more to think of it. Actually, you know what? That's not a bad – because let's be honest. Like, Sportsnet's been very good to us, but if we knew – and the radio side has still been great. Like, I listen to the radio sometimes, especially when I'm at work to get, you know, the commentary and stuff. But the TV side of it, man, and maybe it's just because of COVID and some of these guys can't be at the games, but it's been lacking, man.
Like, yes, it has.
The sound, was it last week where there was no arena sound and it looked like John Shorthouse was like announcing in, you know, in his bathroom, and I'm like, what the heck's going on here? The sound's been off. It's been delayed by a second. You hear the arena sound sometimes before you hear Shorthouse. That's even not even like when they're obviously on the road. That's been happening in Rogers Arena when they're in the building. And one thing that I've hated about for the last few years is where Sportsnet's gone more national, where they're trying to obviously cut corners, save money. Thank you. When they first started, you had Sportsnet Pacific. Was actually Sportsnet Pacific. You had Don Taylor and Gary Vogt. As soon as the game ended, we had a post-game show, Canucks-oriented. I loved it. Now the Canuck game ends. Within 30 seconds, they cut, and they're like, oh, what a great game by the Canucks.
That's it.
Oh, the Canucks lost 2-1. Yeah, let's talk about the Raptors and the Maple Leafs. Yeah. And, oh, and the Canucks, let's bring an interview in for 30. It's embarrassing.
It is pathetic.
It's not just Vancouver. Let's be honest. It's not just the Canucks. I'm sure it goes to other markets. I'm not sure where Edmonton rights or Ottawa. I know some of them are with TSN, but it's everywhere. It's Edmonton, Calgary, other teams that are followed by Sportsnet. It's the same thing. They cut back to Toronto where it's like 1 o'clock in the morning and they do a show about the Raptors for 45 minutes. And then maybe they'll mention the Canucks or the Oilers or the Flames. If you want to succeed here locally, it's got to be local oriented. So if that's going to be, you know, C-Mac getting involved and doing a local show that they produce and they give to Sportsnet for whatever reason, that's great. Let the local guys do it and let it be Canuck-oriented, because I'm really getting sick and tired. Sportsnet's basically become TSN. And the biggest draw for Sportsnet at the beginning is because they were regional broadcasters for all these teams, and that's why I loved it.
That was the last
5 years. Yeah, and now it's done. It hasn't been – there's no difference. What's the difference between Sportsnet and TSN now? I turn them on, and I swear to God, not one time ever are the Canucks or, you know, the Oilers or even the Flames the top story. It's either – Leafs or the Raptors on both sides. And the Leafs or the Raptors may not even be playing.
It might Canadians be make it in sometimes.
Yes, sometimes, right?
But Austin Matthews,
I'm not kidding. There was Edmonton was playing somebody. Edmonton, I think it was a Battle of Alberta. This was earlier in the year. And you don't think that's going to be the top story on both channels. What was the top story on TSN? Austin Matthews shaves his mustache. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. I'm like, it's to a point that you can't even get mad about it. It's just hilarious. It's like, what do you even say to some stupidity like that? It's like, we've had a lot of media personalities on from TSN, from Sportsnet, all great guys. It's not really their fault. James Duffy, we've had on. Mm-hmm. It's not on them. It's obviously higher ups. That's all they care about. So why? I agree. If we could do something that's more locally oriented, even CKNW on the radio side, if it's going to be somewhere that way, that honestly, it would be a blessing in disguise for this market.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I definitely couldn't agree more. And like I said, that was the whole point of Sportsnet, was to have our own in-home, homegrown broadcast, and they stole it away. It doesn't make any sense at all.
And let's be honest, if you're Jim Rutherford and you're looking at the media scene in Vancouver, what type of content has now taken over as the number one spot? Local content by Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. That's a home run.
Can't we keep
it local?
Come on, guys. We're local.
We are local.
That's give us the rights. TJ can host.
We had the rights. We had almost 10,000 listeners a freaking episode on Sportsnet. And for some reason, that wasn't good enough because C-Mac left. But anyways.
TJ can be the host, so he can't really give his opinion. You know, like Murphy doesn't really give his opinion too much. He just wants to host. TJ, you host. Me, wow. Ryan, and Sat will take care of the rest of actual commentating and talking about what's going on the ice, because we know what you're going to say.
There we go.
Go, Canucks, go!
Well, you guys didn't even ask me about the playoffs because you already knew what I was going to say. So yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, we know it's a yes for you. Okay, so I know Nav and I are up against the clock here, but I do want to quickly visit, because I'm hoping this is something that we can all kind of throw our hats in the ring with an opinion and revisit on the next episode.
Yeah.
We talked about Halak and the potential for a trade.
Yeah.
But I think we're all aware at this point there's another, at least one significant move coming. There's blood in the water here. Somebody's about to go. It's probably the likes of Miller, Besser, or Horvat.
Yeah.
I think Miller has the best trade value significantly, and teams want him. But I don't know if he's the best fit. I mean, he's a guy that can move around from center to winger. So I'm going to go to Nav first here.
Well, Ryan, I want to hear your thoughts first. Expand on that, because, like, you know, you always got some good insights here.
Well, here's my thoughts on Miller in general. It depends on what his perception is in the dressing room right now, because Miller and Horvat, I think, both can't coexist together. They're both guys that want to lead and want to do it very different ways. Bo Horvat's more that Trevor Linden lead with example, whereas Miller is more that vocal, high energy, show them on the ice sort of thing. And those two guys are not, I don't think, man, if they could find a way, going to be able to coexist as leaders on this team. So likely one of them is going to have to go. I love Horvat, so I'd be sad to see him go. I think Miller has more value right now. But it's a question, I mean, because they're talking about sending him to example for Minnesota and potentially Kevin Fiala and a pick coming back. Well, Kevin Fiala is a poor man's JT Miller. Mm. So we're trading down at that point. So I guess to me, I think Besser's not the guy to go. One, his value's not high enough. He hasn't played well enough. And two, he hasn't reached his ceiling yet.
Yeah.
So it's got to be one of those two. And I think Miller's the guy if you get what you want.
Hmm. So, I mean, now if you're going to go ahead, but
yeah, I know what you're going to say. So I'll go. I mean, do I want to trade JT Miller? Hell no. And given the choice, who would I rather trade, JT Miller or Bo Horvat? Probably Bo Horvat, because I like what JT Miller brings to the table. He can play wing, he can play center. Horvat's never shown that he can play wing, right? JT Miller's goals per game or points per game has been higher from that age that Horvat's at.
Yeah.
Horvat's a good player, but, like, you know, what have I said for years? I've said it to you guys. I've said it to buddies, is I want somebody that's a leader on this team that's going to drag him into the fight and say, we're doing this. Horvat's a great player, but what's been the complaint about Horvat this year? He's seen some of his guys get hit, and he kind of turtles away.
I know, really, man.
I don't want to hate
the Pekulzin. The Pekulzin against was England, wasn't it, or McNabb?
It's frustrating. So JT Miller's one of those guys that just, like, you know what? I like the fact that he gets angry. I like the fact that sometimes he's yelling at Pettersson and Besser, because, you know what? Let's be honest, they're great players, but they don't have that. You need anger. You need a little bit of frustration in your game to get to that next level, right?
Yeah.
PD's too nice. I love Pettersson, but sometimes somebody who drops your stick, Pettersson picking it up and giving it to them. Fuck, I don't need that on my team.
I know. I
need someone that's going to freaking grab the stick and throw it into the crowd. Like, I need some anger.
And it's an Oilers jersey.
Yeah, well, they're, you know, we'll discuss that next time. But the issue I have is, where do you think this team is? Do you think this team is ready to win a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years? Unfortunately, I don't think they are.
And well, we don't know, because the moves, we haven't seen any moves. Like, what if Jim Rutherford made a trade for like, you know, a right-handed defenseman that could play next to Quinn Hughes, who, a top four guy. I don't know. Colton Parayko, because they are apparently rumored to want, you know, they want someone, an asset at the deadline here. They want to bring in somebody out there, you know. Maybe in the offseason you make a move and get yourself a Devin Tate style player. There are avenues out there to acquire, you know, a top four, a top two potentially, if you're lucky enough to get a Devin Tate like that. But there are avenues to acquire these guys that exist beyond the draft. All right. You know, people always say you have to draft a defenseman and draft your the core, you know, group of defensemen to succeed, but that's not the case anymore. There's a lot of avenues in the cap world where teams are up against the cap facing numerous constraints. Some of them have an abundance of defensemen. Some teams have an abundance of forwards. Others may have an abundance of goaltending. The bottom line is, if you look for those avenues and you make those types of deals, you can significantly improve your team right now. Like if, for example, if you traded Besser for a top four right-handed defenseman right now,
you won't get.
You not think that moves the needle of this team? Because Besser's more.
You won't get that for Besser.
Yeah, but hypothetically, maybe not now. Okay, well, hold on. The point is, whether you trade Besser now or later, or the thing is, using him as an example, people are always talking about, yes, he's so young, he represents, he hasn't entered his prime yet. He could still be that person. He could still make that potential come true.
I don't think he can either,
but that still exists. So when you say it's a low value, no, it's not low value. You're not trading Besser at low value. You're trading that potential to another team who believes they can exacerbate or
build on that.
Speed it up.
Yeah.
Bring it out of him. Right. So it's like you do that trade for his potential and you bring in a guy who is an active, like a known commodity right now in this league. And that boosts your team because Besser's more replaceable than JT Miller. You can find another Besser. Hoglander could become a Besser. Pekolzin could become a Besser.
Besser's tough to replace, man.
But who's tougher to replace is my point. Who's tougher to replace is my point.
Arguable. Okay, so.
No, is it arguable? You replace a guy like Miller. It's a significant hole in your roster. Like,
let's strip it away.
A guy who could play wing and center, all situations. Besser hasn't played the penalty kill once in his
career. But you think he'll resign here? You straight up think he'll resign
here? Well, I don't know anymore because Frank Cervalli just said that he may not resign. But I think Frank is working hard for his buddies in New York. No. They want him to use Frank to get Miller to New York, I think. But I don't
know. Ryan, go ahead.
Okay, so here we go. We're going to wrap this up, guys. Let's make our I think it's going to work out perfectly because I'm going to name three players, and I think we're all on different sides of this triangular fence here. So for next episode, who of these three do you think is no longer going to be a Canuck? Miller, Besser, or Horvat? I'll go first. I think it's going to be Miller.
Well, it depends on our next episode too, right? Like how quick are we going to do the next one?
Well, I mean, sometime in 2023.
Let's just call it the trade deadline bet.
Yeah, okay. The trade deadline bet. Okay, all right. So I'm saying it's going to be Miller. And as much as I don't like to say it, I suspect it's going to be Minnesota.
All right, I'll go. And does it have to be this trade deadline or could it be end of this year? So do I have to give you an answer?
This is called the trade deadline bet. Yeah, we'll revisit it.
Trade deadline. Come on, man.
So I can't say they're all.
Nobody wants to let go of Miller. That's the thing.
Okay. No. Okay. If you put a gun to my head and make me choose, it's going to be JT Miller for one reason. One reason only. Man. He brings back the most value. Look at all these picks out there. That all over to all the media guys that are posting, including Frank, is saying, what can we get for JT Miller? Possibly a top prospect on that team.
Yeah.
Top prospect on that team. A first round pick and a piece. You're gonna get two pieces plus a pick.
Yeah.
Listen, if we're not anywhere close, and you can get like I said earlier, Colorado, a new hook, or one of those good defensemen from the New York Rangers who are just filled with them. I hate it. Yeah. I make that trade. It sucks. I hate it.
You're asking me who do I think, not who do I want. So obviously,
yes. Who do you think? That's a big distinction.
Man, I can't. Like, there's just too much noise around JT Miller right now. Here's the thing. I'll twist. Obviously, I'm picking Miller, but I'll say this: if they won't trade Miller if they're in the hunt, so they got time here. Like another couple of weeks, three weeks maybe.
What's
the hunt is if they go on another little bit of a run here.
But if they're in the hunt and they don't trade Miller, their defensive depth is atrocious.
Well, that's why you trade Besser at the deadline for a right-handed defenseman.
No, okay, so
you
I do that move.
Besser, he doesn't do anything for this close, team, man. He's so small up there. I love the guy. I want him to do well, but he just pisses me off.
You're getting nothing for Besser. You're nothing getting.
You will get something. You will get something for Besser and a pick.
You know why?
There's no way.
Because there's no cost certainty on him. He's his next contract right now would be $7.5 million qualified.
The team that acquires him has the rights to his next contract. Come on.
Yeah, you want to give him – he's not worth $70.5 million.
Well, he doesn't have to take the – they could still negotiate a deal. He could talk to the team as if they have his rights. Maybe they – first of all, maybe they have enough cap space to do that, obviously. But I know – I'm saying I'm picking Miller. I'm picking Miller. He's going to be Miller. Fuck.
I answered your question, but I will say this. JT Miller will not be traded at the deadline. It's not going to happen. None of those three players will be traded at the deadline. In the offseason,
it's
going to be JT Miller. Okay. He will survive this year, but in the offseason, with still a year left on his contract, the value will still be high. More teams will get involved that at the offseason are going to get better.
Yeah,
that's when he'll get traded. He'll be here for the year. They're not going to – they'll move Halak. They'll move a little small pieces, maybe even a Mott.
Mott,
You know what? Luke Shen.
I think Mott and Shen are easy pieces to move. Easy pieces.
Yeah. And I would move Mott.
Those guys. You load up on picks with those guys.
And I like Mott, but you know what? Fourth-line players, they're a dime a dozen. I know we love them, but you can get fourth-line players for $750,000.
And Nav, here's another reason why you're right. I think they will – trade him after this year is because the picks you're going to get in the first round are late first round picks, and you don't want to get a late first round pick for JT Miller.
Unless
you want to get a higher pick if possible, or at least bet on a higher pick with a team. You judge their situation that's maybe looking to make a move, make a splash, but they're still on the bubble. Well, that's a better bet than a playoff bound team that's going to be a late pick for you coming back.
I want to be in the who's the guy in 2 years? Is it Bedard? Who's a superstar coming?
Connor Bedard in 2023. Yes. If I get a first round pick in 2023, I'll fucking take it from Miller.
I would trade him for less. I would trade him to a really shitty team. I would be like, Arizona, do you guys want to?
Nobody's going to give you their 2023
considerations in a first round pick.
He's the next like Connor Mick, Sidney Crosby, Gretzky, man. That's what he is.
So he's not going to be a Canuck. Thanks for telling me.
All right, take us home, Ryan.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for sticking around with us. This has been a long-awaited episode, and we're sure happy to be back. And hopefully we can do this again a little bit sooner next time. For TJ and Nev, I'm Ryan Cattermole. We've been the Harshcast. Thanks so much, everybody.
Guess who's back?